You're listening to Thrive, conversations from the fertile edges with me, Pollyanna Darling. The edge is where different ecosystems meet. It's the place where the tended meets the untended, where field meets forest. Edges are diverse, abundant with life, and a little unruly. In this first series of conversations, to celebrate the launch of my new book, Bedridden to Buff, you'll hear stories and wisdom of people who have direct experience of living through, with, and beyond pain, sharing the information and ideas that open portals to new possibilities. Today, I'm really happy to be sharing time and space with Jana Bowen. Jana is an experienced therapist with over 20 years practice in bodywork, meditation, yoga, qigong, and art therapy, and is the author and illustrator of the rainbow turtle Golden Dolphin. He's a professional artist specializing in marine animals and exploring consciousness through his paintings. Welcome, Jana.
Hello, Pollyanna.
So I think it would be really great, first up, if you could share with us a little of your journey of how you came to be a therapist. What brought you to that?
Well, certainly a lot of different things. I think really the intensity of pain in my own life, feeling a lot of different aspects that felt like limitations, really. I think I had a very different childhood, and childhood that wasn't necessarily stable. I grew up overseas in India in the mountains. I lived with other children who were orphans, and they were in exile from their own country. So, you know, these are Tibetan children whose family were either lost to the Chinese invasion, or they had died on their trip over from India across the Himalayan peaks. And so I was considered very blessed and lucky to have parents, but then I wasn't living with both my parents during the early years of my childhood. And then I came back to Australia. And then I remembered experiences that I'd had that were challenging, that my memory had suppressed. There were experiences of abuse. And at the time, a lot of these things didn't really seem to be all that important. But then as the years went on, we were just talking earlier about chronic back pain that I had. And that was a major issue for me. It debilitated me to be in bed sometimes. I went to see lots of different therapists for my own health. And then I also had mental health issues. It wasn't to the point where I was going into mental health wards or anything like that, but I had severe self-doubt. I was bullied in school. I went to, can't even remember how many different schools I went to. So I moved around a lot. So keeping friendships was very difficult within just staying in the one area. And so stability wasn't a constant, but then along with that came different strengths, which the more that I've been doing healing work, the more that I realized, oh, actually, there's places where I have strengths that when I tap into my true nature, I can access that rather than trying to be like everybody else. And so these experiences really led me to try and find solutions. You know, those parts of me that tried to distract myself from the pain only lasted so long, but then those distractions inevitably intensified the pain. And the more that I sought solutions, the more that I realized how I respond to pain is quite a big component of what is transformed, whether I experience health or more pain.
And when you say distractions, what kind of distractions are we talking about?
I think drugs, dope, smoking dope was a big thing. I think, you know, sex, food, relationships, you know, watching TV, internet, don't really, as I've learned about trauma, which is, you know, what causes pain, that these distractions are actually a way of maintaining life. So they have a certain integrity to them, because if we don't distract ourselves, it's just too intense and the body starts to, you know, and the psychology starts to fragment so much that we would not want to live anymore. And
so So are you saying that's they're like a way of self-soothing?
Yeah, exactly. So that self-soothing is functional to a certain degree, but the problem with the long period of the patterns that dissociate, so dissociation is another way of a psychological term for distraction, and it helps for a short period of time, but then after a certain period of time, we adapt to these things that we're distracting ourselves from the present moment. And after a period of time, the present moment starts to feel lackluster. And that's where we start to see a whole other sort of problems starting to show up. And so that's what happened for me, was I started to go, oh my God, hanging out with all of these kids at school, they're all smoking dope. My mother was smoking dope when I was young. I thought there was nothing wrong with it. This stuff grows in the ground.
Yeah. Like,
she had mental health issues starting to come in. I had started to see paranoia, anxiety, social isolation, self-doubt, all of these sort of things are really very limiting to being in the world, engaging socially, building connections, relationships. I felt really isolated. And then that's when I started to see there's some serious problems here. And it wasn't until a long time later, when I started to come out of a lot of this trauma, that I could see how much it was impacting my life. But when I was in it, in the midst of it, I just could feel the limitations and the problems that I had, but I couldn't directly see. It's kind of like when you're in the fog, you don't realize, you can't see how beautiful the world is outside of that fog. You just see fog.
Yeah, it reminds me of something someone said to me the other day, which was some sort of joke that was, somebody said to a fish, you know, how beautiful your water is, and the fish said, what water?
Yes, exactly. So we don't know the extent of how trauma can actually affect our life until we start coming out of it. And this is what I've learned in response to how trauma affects psychology, which is the mind, and physiology, which is the body, and then the conjunction of the two. Not only that, but we have our emotions, we have our spirit, you know, that's what animates the body. So spirituality often gets a lot of sort of association with it, but it's really when we see, we sense with trauma, we have a sense of loss of radiance, a loss of, you know, people who are highly stressed and traumatized, they don't have that same radiance and light, and there's a lot to be explained around that.
Mm. So how did you come to craniosacral? And for those people who don't know what that is, can you explain a little about what craniosacral actually is?
So, yeah, it's a really profound modality. The actual modality that I trained in is called biodynamic craniosacral therapy. So it's not like, you know, biodynamic loaf of bread or biodynamic way of growing food. Biodynamic basically means it's a style of bodywork. So biodynamic craniosacral therapy, it was originated from osteopathy. And there was a fellow, Andrew Taylor Still, I think of his name, and this founding father of osteopathy has 4 children who all died from spinal meningitis. And the traditional model of medicine is that drugs fix all these problems, but he was incredibly depressed after his children died and decided that there would have to be a better way to respond to the issues of health. And he started practicing osteopathy and learned that there was a style of working with the body that helps the body through its own intelligence to come back to health. And that's facilitated through deeply listening to the body and acknowledging that the very same intelligence that designs the body at conception, that all helped all of the cells organize into the various different systems of the body. And we've got the respiratory, the nervous, the muscular, the muscle, the skeletal, all these various different systems all knew how to design themselves and organize themselves to create a fully whole human being. Now,
which is pretty amazing, right? It's pretty incredible. We don't think about it that often, but the fact that all those cells get on with, you know, building that whole person is quite extraordinary.
And this is the thing, is that intelligence does that is the same intelligence that is continuously with us and facilitating this conversation, that it continues the beating of the heart. And whenever something comes out of balance, this same intelligence is working to bring it back to balance, which is what we call homeostasis. And this style of body work works with this intelligence, deeply listens to this intelligence, and it is about facilitating and supporting this intelligence. And the way we do that is through connecting with it, maintaining a neutral space so that it can take the forefront, and we as therapists step back to simply listen and hold space for this to unfold so that the intelligence within our client becomes self-aware and in coherence. And coherence means harmony, to actually communicate without conflict or static in getting in the way. And when we have incoherence, when we have a lack of health, we're experiencing that static, something offline.
So why is it that the body doesn't do this for itself? Like, why do we need to go and have somebody else help us with that?
If you're tired of feeling trapped by chronic pain, get inspired and reclaim your life with Bedridden to Buff. In this little book, I share my remarkable yet gentle transformation from being bedridden in 2017 to winning medals in a national paddleboard competition. This uplifting story includes powerful alternative healing methods and pain management techniques, plus insights to help you change your relationship with pain. It gives you the tools you need to move beyond chronic pain and into a life of vitality and gratitude. Find Bedridden to Buff on your favorite ebook or audiobook platform. And now back to our fertile conversation.
So that's a really good question. That's kind of like when we're looking at life, why does stuff happen that causes us to get unwell? And it's kind of like life and evolution. You know, we have imbalances for a very good reason. The body's saying, hey, listen, do you notice this coming up to the surface to be looked at? And so when my back pain came up and it was surfacing, what I really feel was going on was Mike Boxall, who wrote the book called The Empty Chair, he calls these things undigested life experiences. And it really gives a very tangible approach that doesn't make it right or wrong. It's just simply, for me, my back pain was an undigested life experience where I I adapted and responded to events and situations where I wasn't held and I wasn't made to feel welcome and wanted in the world. And so doubt and these ways of approaching not having immediate relatives that were able to hold me and tell me that I was safe began to have theological and psychological condensifications, you know, so parts of my body started to go into a defensive mechanism to try and protect myself from the external environment where I didn't feel safe. And rightly so, because these are just simply responses to try and keep me safe. And so I had this huge lump in my neck for years. It felt like a rock in my neck. And it wasn't until I learned how to calm and soothe my body and mind from inside, in ways that in craniosacral therapy we call the resources. So when we have something that is troubling us, it's some people might call it a trigger or a challenge or something that causes us pain. The distraction is usually something external, and it's to a point where we feel overwhelmed and it's too much, and then we need something to tone down the intensity. So that's where I used to watch Netflix earlier in my childhood, you know, smoking dope, those sort of things. But after we learn how to apply resources like going out into nature, talking to someone we love and someone who listens and cares for us but doesn't try to fix us, maybe a therapist, or doing some yoga, some meditation, playing some music, these sort of things offer resources that help us to regulate our nervous system. And say, for instance, seeing a craniosacral therapist, when our body is holding on to trauma or pain, that therapist helps us to feel what safety can look and feel like. We get a sense of, my experience is not being made wrong. The defensive mechanism, the history that I've been through, the intensity, the pain, the trauma, is just acknowledged in a neutral state. That's simply what is. And it's also there for a very good reason. It kept us safe to a certain degree. And so through this state of just deep listening to the body as it is, suddenly the body gets a sense of, it is safe here. And that's when, during a craniosacral therapy practice, the unconscious awareness of the body, the intelligence within the body, Steve Porges, who wrote the book Polyvagal Theory, coined the neuroception, which is the brain detects in its environment, usually beneath our conscious awareness, whether the body is safe or not. And so with craniosacral therapy, we offer a touch that is aware of this neuroception, aware of the brain that's looking at its environment, detecting whether it's safe or not, and ensure to provide an approach and a touch that the client will sense on a physiological, on a psychological level, that it's safe to actually be yourself. And once this is starting to really come to the fore, the client really starts to sense that. Usually all of the defenses that we carry in the world around us suddenly start to drop. And when those defenses drop, our nervous system starts to settle. And when the nervous system starts to settle, then the healing process begins. And then usually deep aspects of, call it the psyche or It's just the intelligence of the body starts to allow anything that's been repressed to surface. It's a deeper aspect of healing starts to occur. And so when the body knows, oh, I've got resources available here, I can let whatever hasn't been addressed go. And
yeah.
Integration starts to happen. And that was a profound process in my life where I was starting to see, my God, much less back pain, all of the intense relationships that I used to have, a lot of the problems that were common in my life started to not be so common.
And do you think it was incremental process, or was there a pivotal moment or event that sort of changed everything?
I would say that it was a very much an incremental process. The craniosacral therapy sessions themselves were very much incremental. So I think we in our Western society tend to have a kind of a drive-through approach. So you go in the drive-thru, it's ready, you know, it serves, great, I've got everything, I'm going off, everything's done now. And I don't think that's how we can approach help at all. I think really there's intergenerational trauma, there's trauma that's collective trauma, you know,
There's also just straight up physiological stuff where you might have been carrying your body in a particular way for 40 or 50 years.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's not going to undo suddenly overnight, boom.
And some people are lucky and blessed to have instantaneous, miraculous results, you know.
Yeah.
I don't happen to be one of them, but I genuinely notice that there tends to be a lot of expectation placed onto the body that one session should fix everything. And, you know, I look at it like a garden. It really does take time to grow. You don't see an avocado tree grow in one day. You don't see...
yeah,
many things in the garden aren't quite instantaneous, and I think the body is like that. It's like when you're learning to drive, you commit things into cellular memory, and then once the body has that in its cellular memory, it knows, and it can add certain other things on top of it, and it just is in the unconscious memory of the body to be able to do those sorts of things. So same thing, the opposite way around. When things are coming out of the body, it's from cellular memory, genetic memory. What's his name? Richard Rudd, who wrote The Gene Keys, talks about junk DNA. It's a fine to say that we have junk DNA that houses the traumas, that the things that don't seem relevant to gene pool, but within them the things that we need to heal and work through and make peace with them instead of dissociating from them all the time and distracting ourselves. Once we start to deeply listen to the body, come back home to the things that challenge us and learn to be neutral. Being neutral is actually like when something happens, whether it's pleasurable or uncomfortable. So simply sitting down, we might have in the scope of 5 minutes many different experiences, sensations, thoughts, emotions, and they'll range in the full gamut of responses and perspectives that we have on them, on whether they are pleasurable or, you know, uncomfortable. And if we practice neutrality towards them, which is one of the blessings that craniosacral therapy brings, is learning how to find how, when something surfaces into conscious awareness, there's usually an approach of this is good, that's bad.
Yeah.
Right? So, oh, this is a good conversation, I'm enjoying this, or oh, this is boring, or this is triggering me, I don't like it. I wish it could be over as soon as possible. So if we have these different concepts of whether something is good or bad, but beneath that is it could go either way, dependent on our perspective. And bodily sensation and trauma, undigested life experience, are able to be better digested when we maintain neutrality. So
by neutrality, you mean you're not labeling anything either good or bad.
Right. And the way we do that is we notice the sensations as simply sensations. So say, for instance, I've got back pain, right, or a headache.
Or you're in a bad conversation.
What's that?
Or you're in a bad conversation. I'm keen to use the conversation example. Let's follow that through.
Let's say we're talking to somebody and they are just talking, and they haven't even realized that it's been about 10 minutes now and you've switched off. You're kind of looking for an escape or something. And they're not even aware of this, right? So it's so easy to judge this conversation as bad. This person's a bad listener. They're not really available. And instead, if we notice, it's probably actually easier to use the analogy of a headache, because when we bring it back to a sensation experience, so the headache is made up of usually densification and a lack of blood flow in the vessels inside the brain that causes constriction, and then that causes a sensation of pain, which is happening in the head, and then that probably can tend to have restriction in eyesight. And say, if we go back to the conversation, if we are simply aware of the thoughts we're having about the conversation, if we're aware of the sound of the person's voice, if we look at all of the various different experiences we're having, and then also the thought of this is a bad conversation, we bring it back to the present moment experience, and we notice if it's a headache, we notice the tension, we notice the constriction, we notice the areas of the head that we have the sensation within. And also awareness of the thought, this is really uncomfortable, there's a part of me that wants the pain to go away. And then beneath that awareness, we have an experience of the framework that's all happening within.
So what I'm feeling while you're speaking is a sensation, if it was a bad conversation, for example, of relaxing into that as an experience, so that I'm no longer kind of fighting the experience of being in this boring conversation with the person that's just going on and on and on and hasn't even registered really that it's my turn or whatever. And I can feel how much that takes a lot of tension out of my body to just relax into this experience of being in what is actually happening right now.
Yeah. This is a fundamental thing, is it draws us back to the present moment. And the one place where the body lives and can ever be in is the present moment. And that's the beginning of healing, because trauma is undissolved, undigested life experience, which usually resides in the past. Anxiety is usually about what could happen in the future. So by listening to sensation, by listening to the body, what we're doing is we're actually coming back to the body. We're coming into present time, and the sensations are a portal and access points to this present moment for the body to become self-aware.
Yeah. So what we've been talking about, I mean, for me, it feels quite a mental process, you know, like when I practice this kind of thing, I need to engage my brain and really concentrate and think about what's happening. And I'm really curious about creativity because you have your own art practice. You also do art therapy. And I'm super curious about whether you feel, one, that your artistic practice played a role in your healing, and also any thoughts that you have about the role of creativity in healing, because it's a much less mental process, right?
Yeah. So absolutely. I really do feel like creativity has been a big part of my health journey. I think healing has some aspects to it where it almost seems like it's never ending. It's just like if I was to look at healing, it's like something that I add to myself, whereas health is the nature of my body. And when I look at my practice, one of the things that I have noticed was that I kind of drifted away from my art practice for a while I trained in craniosacral therapy, because there was a part of me that was trying to add something to myself that I felt I was not already, that art was going to give me, that creativity was going to give me. But this practice of being present, this practice of learning to be able to become neutral to challenging life experiences, to trauma, to stress, to health issues, to pain, and finding the health that already exists in the intelligence of my body, in the intelligence of the universe, because there is an intelligence that is in absolutely everything. And when we have very challenging experiences in life, we kind of feel disconnected from that. My journey was to come into a deep experience of that intelligence, and creativity has been able to deepen. And when I play music, when I sing, it helps me to access something beyond my limited sense of self, the ego. When I deepen and journey into what I love, right, the beauty and the resources that the universe offers, if I move into those things instead of waiting until I've earned or deserved, if I just simply do what inspires me, that's incredibly resourcing. It's like being in nature, listening to the ocean, listening to the trees, going and time around a waterfall. They give me incredible amounts of joy. And then creating art simply because I love it and it's an expression of my soul, and then taking that leap of faith to share it in the world, to stand in the space and go, it doesn't matter what other people think of it. I share it because it gives me incredible joy. And that is a transformative experience, because it gives me the ability to let go of those stories of limitation and of not enoughness, of there's something wrong with me, no one will ever love me because if they love me, they'd do this or that. It's almost like that healing journey was all about recognizing that I'm not measured by the things that I've created. I'm actually already enough. When I really come home to the fact that, like, when I sit with the essence of my being, there's nothing wrong. And that's taken a significant amount of self-love and really, I think, neuro-linguistic programming. I've started to look at that, and that was really profound, because it shows me that who I am is not something that's open to argument whether I'm enough or not. It's that we are all enough.
I like that. I really like that. Just even that statement, who I am is not open to argument.
Right?
Yeah, it's such a great statement. It's just like, well, this is it and that's that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's like we've got all this conditioning that we pick up in society. Oh, have you got a good enough car? Have you got a nice enough house? Have you earned enough money? Have you got this? And then there's this idea that we measure ourselves up against all of these things that we were told that makes us lovable, you know?
But yeah, and I think if you're a woman, good enough car, house, whatever is probably still there, but there's also, are you nice enough? Are you agreeable enough? Are you kind enough to everybody else? Are you giving as much as you can or as much as this person or is that? Like, it's almost as though your life is only worthy if you've poured it into other people. And if you haven't done that, then you're not, there's so many ways that we can be not good enough, right?
Right, right. And this is where, when I really dive, I think it doesn't really matter what your calling in life is. If we start to really see our enoughness, that's our connection to source. That's our essence. That's the remembering who we really are, and that's where our health is. And so when we bring that out into the work that we do, and we share our remembering of our essence in the work that we do with others, it sparks this remembering. It sparks this awakening. And then I feel like that's how we kind of light each other up, because that's what we're all yearning for, to remember that we are already enough as we are. We don't have to measure ourselves up against someone else's, you know, idea of enoughness.
Yeah. So yeah. In case there are people listening who are thinking, what on earth are you talking about remembering who I really am? And how do I do that anyway? You know, like, what is the method of this? What are your, I guess, probably simplified thoughts on this? Because it can go super deep, right? But if someone's going, well, how do I remember who I really am? And maybe they're like me and they don't really enjoy yoga and meditation. Are there other ways?
There definitely are. I think that all the way life will inevitably help us to remember who we really are. And there's no, you know, it's like that analogy of all roads lead to Rome.
Yeah.
There's a guy called Lauren Roche who wrote the book, The Radiant Sutras, and he talks about meditation can simply be you walking in nature or sitting down to drink your cup of tea or coffee in the morning. It's how you do your life. It's the way you go about being and breathing. It's this essence that shines through and animates every part of you. And when you can feel that, when you can listen and hear that part of your essence shining through, then you start to get a feeling and a remembering of who you really are. But it's even in the hesitations and the tensions and the self-doubt, that when we can allow those things to be there. It's like when I'm creating a piece of art and there's this wondering of, is it going to be good enough, or can I make a mark that's just beautiful? Really, all of the parts that make the mark, when I allow myself to be fully me, authentically expressed through everything I do, and I enjoy the process, and I let myself enjoy the experience of being alive, breathing the air around me, enjoying looking out into the world around me and hearing and listening to everything, and I allow myself to linger and drink in the things that I appreciate, something starts to shift. And there's a remembering that takes place of all the different parts of my soul that are lit up by the beauty. And there's a lady called Sandra Ingerman who wrote the book Soul Retrieval. And she says, when we sing, we don't sing to perform or to get an acknowledgement from somebody else, but we offer up our medicine and simply wish for the benefit of the beings that we share this planet with. And that transforms the gift that we offer, and it takes our attention away from how others perceive us and into the vibration and the frequency that this offers the world around us.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about because, I mean, I have that experience. I sing in a choir at the moment, and sometimes I'm really tired because I've had a long day at work and I've been on the computer all day and I kind of don't really feel like going. And then I'll go and I still feel tired when I'm there and we're singing and we do 2 hours of singing and I get to the end and I've been singing in harmony with a group of people and I've been in this wall of the vibration of all those voices together and everyone breathing together. And I am massively energized by it. So by the time I leave, it's almost like I don't remember who that person was who walked in, who was exhausted. But it would be easy to not go to choir because I'm tired. And also the other thing that I'm really aware of listening to you is that the being able, at least for me anyway, being able to appreciate my life to the level that you're speaking about required me to integrate a whole lot of sort of abandoned parts of myself, child parts that were undigested life experiences, like you say. And so I had a massive experience of integration through doing some inner child work and remembering who that child was outside of everything that took place in my childhood. And that was very liberating because I did remember who I actually am and what the essence of me is about. And that allows me to show up at something like choir and just sing my head off without caring what anyone thinks. Whereas 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do that. I would be very conscious about whether I was taking up too much space or if people were judging the way that I was singing or if I was being too out or too in or something, you know, like just caught up in ways of not enjoying what was happening. And so I'm very aware, I guess, that doing that work made a huge difference to how I feel on the inside about myself and my willingness to show up in my life just as me, without argument, like you said before. And not arguing with myself about it either.
Yeah, that's absolutely beautiful too. And the other thing I was going to share is that when we are singing, we're actually engaging the vagus nerve. So when we're talking about trauma and pain, the sympathetic nervous system is part of the nervous system that's in fight or flight. So if we're in the fight or flight part of the nervous system, we're actually in a defensive pattern, and that will make it harder to actually be creative, access memory, support the digestive system and support health. But if we're singing, it actually helps with through engaging the vagus nerve to downregulate the nervous system, improve memory, it helps with a whole facet of different things and to support health. That's why one of the reasons why I love singing is not only that, but also to help with self-expression. So it really helps us not only access different parts of our voice, but to improve communication. Fascinating. Such a wonderful exercise.
Yeah, super cool. I've got one more. Well, it might not be the last one, it might be the last question. As you know, I love being out on the water and I'm very much attached to the ocean. And I'd love to hear I mean, a lot of your artistic work is focused on the ocean. Is there a particular reason for that?
Yeah, I fell in love with the ocean. I think it was, I moved up from Sydney. So I was back and forward between India and Australia, living in Sydney in the Blue Mountain area for a long time until I moved up to the Sunshine Coast. And then I started surfing, and that's when I started painting, and a lot of my paintings were revolving around the ocean, painted turtles, dolphins, whales, whale sharks. And the messages of the earth, I've had these experiences with the turtles. Once I found a turtle, dead turtle, and buried its shell in the sand and then dug it up under its skull. And I had this experience where all of a sudden, it was like the spirit of the turtle came into me. And I had this incredible, it was just, my whole body started tingling. And all of a sudden, all parts of me that ever felt disconnected from source, from love, was gone. And all I felt was just incredibly loved and absolutely complete. There was nothing that I could want for. And it was like the energy and the spirit of the turtle showed me what it was like to feel absolutely loved. And so I've had these amazing experiences with surfing with a huge pod of dolphins and surfing with whales. I just in absolute awe of the ocean, and there's a intelligence within the ocean and within all bodies of water that just incredibly uplifting that I just cannot fathom. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. Yep. It's definitely my go-to place if I really want to clear my head or my body or just have a complete reset to be out on the ocean. It's the best thing. So I do have one more question.
Yeah. Let's mention before your other question is I also had I saw a golden dolphin in the ocean, which was what inspired the book that I illustrated. So I think there's a profound...
A golden dolphin?
Yeah.
As in it was actually coloured gold?
Yeah. So when I first saw it, I saw this dolphin and I was having this very sort of feeling like a complete victim. And when I saw it, it just sort of got me out of my head and my story. And I was like, I don't believe that can possibly exist. And then it went back in the water. And then it came up again. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, it's there. I can see it. You know, if it happened just the once, it would have been like, that was probably just my imagination.
Yeah.
But then years later, I found out that there is a legend. Kind of like a dream time story of a golden dolphin. And then I started researching about golden dolphin, the symbology of the golden dolphin. And it's all about everything that we value in the world is really about our own, you know, we were talking before about there's no argument about whether we're enough. And the golden dolphin really represents enoughness, infinite value is that we are already enough. And we, instead of looking outside of ourselves out into the world, we really contact ourselves, our true self, we'll know that we are enough. And that's what the golden dolphin is about.
I love that. That feels like a really good place to finish. So if people want to find out more about your art or the biodynamic craniosacral therapy, where can they do that?
So they can go to my two websites, my jahnaboen.com website, so that's jahnaboen.com. That's got my art practice on there and my art therapy. And then the craniosacral therapy is Quantum, Quantum, biointelligence.com.au, so that's biointelligence, www.jannaceneca.com.au.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for speaking with me, Jana. I've really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you for having me on your show. It's been absolutely wonderful, and it's such a pleasure to be able to connect with you and share about these things. You know, I feel like sometimes the challenges and the pain that we have in our lives feels like there's something wrong with us. But like with how diamonds themselves are forged, you know, anything of value goes through the transformative processes to forge something miraculous. If that's what we all go through, there's nothing wrong with us at all. So happy to be able to share all of this.
Yeah, thank you so much. And to everyone else, I will see you at the Fertile Edges.